Radio EcoShock.
When it comes to the Arctic, one of the first stops for both media and scientists is the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. Radio EcoShock is pleased to have as our guest NSIDC Director and Senior Research Scientist, Dr. Mark Cerise. Mark, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on.
Well, to start off, what is the National Snow and Ice Data Center? Is it a government agency?
National Snow and Ice Data Center is not a government agency. We're actually part of the University of Colorado in Boulder, and we are really a research center. We do a number of different things. We do a lot of research on the changing cryosphere, that's the Earth's snow and ice cover, but we also do a lot of data management. That is, we handle a lot of the satellite data from which we assess what's happening to the Arctic sea ice cover, to ice sheets, etc. So we're not a government research center, but like most university centers, yes, we obtain most of our funding from sources like the National Science Foundation or NASA.
And when I picture your work, I think of some really big computers chewing through the best satellite measuring system in the world. Is that realistic?
That is very realistic. If you go upstairs in our building, there'll be a room filled with servers and disks and blinking lights and a lot of whirring. Yeah, we have a very big computer and data storage systems here, and we certainly do crunch a lot of numbers.
And a new record low amount of Arctic sea ice for the summer 2012 season has already been announced up to September 5th. Can you tell us where it stands?
Well, yeah, we broke the old record back, I think it was in August 26th. The old record was held in 2007, not that long ago, of something like, I think it was 4.17 million square kilometers, if that means anything. But we broke that record, and the melt season is still not over. That's what's remarkable. So right now, we were down to something like 3.6 million square kilometers. The old record was about 4.7. So we've pretty much blown that old record away, and we haven't reached bottom yet. So it's been a remarkable year.
And how much smaller is that compared to what we might have seen around 1980?
Yeah, well, if you compare it to data we have from, say, the 1970s to 1980s, that how much ice we have now, say, in late August and September, we've probably lost about 40% of it. So the Arctic sea ice cover is in deep trouble, and I don't see things getting any better.
Are scientists making any predictions about this final record, what it will be for 2012?
Well, we never quite know because a lot of it depends on what the weather patterns are over the next few weeks. And, of course, you can't predict weather very well. I would guess we'd be something like 3.6 million, something like that. And that's a pretty low number, but we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, we're just kind of rather worried about this.
Well, Dr. Mark Cerise, why is the Arctic showing such big changes decades earlier than scientists predicted even 10 years ago?
Well, one thing we have to remember is that for many, many years, it had been realized that when the Earth starts to warm up, we'd see the changes first in the Arctic, and that's where they'd be most pronounced. In fact, it was even back in the late 1800s that a fellow named Svante Arrhenius actually predicted this. So this is nothing new. We always knew it was the Arctic where we were going to see the changes first, and that's because of these climate feedbacks that some of you may have heard about, things like we start to lose the snow and ice cover, exposes darker underlying surfaces that absorbs more of the sun's energy, causes more melt, and so on. But despite that, we really have been surprised at the rapidity of some of these changes. And this is a case where the research is actually having a hard time keeping up with the pace of change.
Have scientists estimated how much of the sea ice meltdown could be due to natural cycles and how much is due to human-induced greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, it's not easy to make a distinct split between those, and it's not necessarily very productive either because the two feed off each other. An example of that is that we know that because of overall warming of the Arctic through many years, the ice is now thinner than it used to be. Well, what that means now is a storm that comes through and disrupts the ice cover, which could cause a further loss of ice, is more effective in doing so now. So we've kind of changed the game here. It's a bit difficult to separate the two. But there is no doubt at all that the Arctic is now responding to increased levels of greenhouse gases. That seems to be incontrovertible at this point, and we'll see how long we can retain that summer ice cover. It may be only a few decades now. You go out this time of year and look at the Arctic from space, and it's essentially a blue ocean.
Mark Cerise, when the sea ice refreezes this year in the polar region, will it be thinner? Will it be more prone to further records in years to come?
Yeah, that's really the way we're looking at it, is that what we're doing now is that we're already setting ourselves up for another low year next year, because what's going to happen is with all this open water we have in the Arctic Ocean right now, well, of course, that's going to refreeze through autumn and winter. But come spring, this is going to be fairly thin ice. And it's that fairly thin ice which is the stuff that more readily melts out the next summer. So every year we sort of get to this point where we lose more and more ice, it kind of sets us up for more of the same next year. So it's a bit of a vicious cycle.
I talked to some climate scientists, and the capability they ask for most is better ways to measure that ice thickness. Is the United States working on improved ice monitoring?
Yes, the United States is very, I think, invested on coming up with better ways to monitor the ice cover. What we can do from satellites easily is measure the extent of ice. That is, how many square kilometers or how many square miles of ice there is. What's a much harder thing to do is measure the thickness of the ice. But the reality is the best measure of the overall health of the ice cover is how thick it is. Well, we have some ways to do this. We had a satellite up there called ICESat, which was actually giving us information on ice thickness. It actually carried a laser altimeter system. Well, ICESat died a little while ago, and a new satellite called ICESat-2 goes up in 2016. Right now, there's something called Operation IceBridge, and what it is a series of aircraft overflights carrying all kinds of instruments. And one of the things we'll do is make flights over the ice cover from which we can get information on thickness. So our resources for looking at the thickness are okay. They're not as good as just measuring the extent. But I think when we get ICESat-2 in orbit, we're really going to have those good capabilities. So it's something that we're working hard on.
What do you think of the observation made by scientists like Jennifer Francis of Rutgers that a reduction in Arctic sea ice could be changing the jet stream and affecting weather further south in both Eurasia and North America?
Yeah, there's very good evidence that that sort of thing is happening. I've worked with actually Dr. Francis for a number of years. So one of the things we've worked on together is this issue of Arctic amplification. This is the outsized rise in air temperatures over the Arctic compared to lower latitudes, and that in large part is driven by the loss of sea ice cover. Well, there's a lot of evidence both from climate models and now from observations that as we warm that Arctic strongly, as we lose the ice cover, this is going to have impacts on patterns of weather and precipitation, not just in the Arctic, but beyond the Arctic. The way to think of this is that if we warm the Arctic strongly compared to the middle latitudes, what this does is it changes the nature of the jet stream. And it, of course, it's the jet stream that really controls so much of the weather we have. So that's where it all sort of links together. Now, is there sort of a smoking gun yet? Can we really say for sure that the observed loss of Arctic sea ice is already having impacts on weather, say, in middle latitudes? Jennifer would probably say yes, or she would definitely say yes. I would say I'd like to see a few more years of data come in, but I think we're definitely heading in the direction of her research.
Dr. Francis is also wondering whether increased snowmelt on the land may have a strong impact on our summer weather in America and Europe. Is the snow cover in the far north reduced as well?
Yes, indeed it is. And again, this is an issue is that if you lose the snow cover, basically you change heating patterns. And this is the sort of thing that weather patterns will respond to. And indeed, we are losing the snow in the north. Now, this is, I think, when we think about this year, 2012, some people say, well, okay, the big story is the loss of the sea ice cover. Well, it actually goes much further than that. You may have heard one issue was that we had a period during the summer where nearly the entire surface of the Greenland ice sheet was undergoing melt, which is very rare. But also, if you look earlier in this year, in May and June, snow cover over the northern hemisphere was at a record low. Okay, so if you're thinking about the cryosphere as a whole, the Earth's snow and ice cover, 2012 has definitely been a bad year.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Mark Cerise of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. Mark, when I was growing up, it was a big deal if an icebreaker made it across the Arctic Ocean. This year, someone in a common 30-foot sailboat made it unassisted through the Northwest Passage to Alaska. This ice melt, to me, seems like it could be the single largest impact of global warming so far on the planet. What do you think about that?
Well, I think what's happening in the Arctic really is that poster child of global warming. As I said before, we'd known for years that the Arctic would be where things happen first and where things are most pronounced. And that's exactly what we've seen. It just seems to be unfolding maybe a little faster than we thought. The way I see it is, the Arctic is that warning signal out there. Arctic is telling us that climate change is real. It is here. It is today. It is not something that's out there 30 years from now. We're dealing with it right now. And if you live in the Arctic, you're dealing with it on a day-to-day basis.
To my knowledge, America has only one icebreaker capable of reaching the deep Arctic in winter months, while Russia has more than a dozen. Does the U.S. need more icebreakers?
Definitely the U.S. needs more icebreakers. And it's a bit incongruous because we're thinking, well, we're losing the ice cover. Well, then why do we need more icebreakers? Well, the answer is that as we begin to lose the summer ice cover, we're going to see more and more activity in the Arctic. The Arctic is going to become more accessible to marine shipping, to tourism. Now, of course, there's a bit of irony here that there's mineral and oil and natural gas resources at the bottom of the ocean, of course, which are going to become more accessible. But this means that you're going to have access to the Arctic year-round, even in winter. And for centuries to come, there's still going to be winter ice. So, yes, as the Arctic becomes more accessible, we're going to need more ice-breaking capability, and we don't have that. The Russians are far ahead of us.
Several centuries from now, it's possible, if we don't manage to control greenhouse gas emissions, the planet could become ice-free. It's been that way in the distant past. Can you picture planet Earth ice-free?
Well, it'd be hard to picture an ice-free planet Earth. Now, when we're talking about ice-free, of course, you're talking also the meltdown of the major ice sheets, the Antarctic ice sheet, the Greenland ice sheet, and that is not going to happen for a long, long, long time. Now, we are going to continue to see sea level rise as we continue to lose mass from the ice sheets and other glaciers and as the oceans warm. But yes, there have been times in the past in Earth's history that it looks like we've been ice-free. That's not going to happen for a long, long time, but the changes that we're seeing today, as they become bigger, well, they're going to be big enough problems that we're going to have to deal with them.
Mark, can you tell us how we can really use the NSIDC website and the resources there to track the latest information?
Yeah, well, sure. We have a very good website, but one of the things we have on our website, all you need to do is if you get on the web and just Google NSIDC, it'll take you right to our website. And one of the most important resources we have is something called the Arctic Sea Ice News and Analysis. It's right there on the top left of our homepage. And if you click on that, what you will get is daily updates of the ice conditions. It'll show you how much ice we have today compared to previous years. And what we also have is periodic discussion pieces where we discuss the evolving ice conditions, how it compares to previous years. We have these throughout the year, even through winter. In summer, they become more frequent. Maybe we have one once a week. We have one that we just released today talking about what happened in August. So that's one of the resources. But actually, on our website, we have a wealth of educational material all about the cryosphere, all about snow. Anything you wanted to know about snow and ice, well, you can get it from the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Of course, we also have the data. If you actually want to download data on snow and ice, say sea ice extent, and do your own analysis, it's right there for you. So we really are the go-to place for information on snow and ice.
I kind of like the fact that I could just snap up a satellite picture using that tool called MAISY. As we finish up, I feel like I might have missed something important. Is there something else you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, I think just kind of reiterate what I said before is that the Arctic is telling us that climate change is real. I remember when I first went to the Arctic back in 1982 as a young graduate student, and I was just amazed at the region when I got there, just this pristine region, seemingly untouched. And just over the course of my research career, I've seen it change. So we think of climate change as something, some people think of it as this slow process. We don't really notice it from year to year. Well, you go up to the Arctic and you get a very different picture.
You have been listening to Dr. Mark Cerise. He's the Senior Research Scientist and Director at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. Mark, thank you for spending this time with us.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.